Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, da-ha-di-di-ha-di-ho. Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, the princess, she walked happily home. Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, she lived happily ever after.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to What the Folklore, Making Sense of Senseless Tales. I am your reader, Carmen.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Gordy, and we're here to read a really weird fairy tale and then discuss it.
You two have never heard this fairy tale before in your lives, and it's coming from a weird place in the world. And not I a weird hope, place, normal place. But
I hope that we never will again, yeah. After tonight.
Well, we'll see.
We've never had a repeat.
Not yet.
We've never yet been... Maybe that should be a thing. No, it shouldn't. It's a bad idea. I'm sorry I said it.
We get enough repeated themes.
What if we just rebooted the show?
What if we did what the worst idea of all time does, and we just read one fairy tale every week for a year?
I veto that immediately.
I feel like
I don't even care which one. I don't want to hear any of them that often.
I mean, no offense to the worst idea of all time, but I think you just came up with a worse idea.
Can we bring them to court?
So sorry for delegitimizing their entire show.
Sorry, Tim and Guy, if you would like to start a fusion podcast with us, maybe we can entertain something. But
we have a story. It's called The Green Serpent.
No.
We could just do that over and over
again. Nope.
I don't think they want to do that, nor do we want to do that.
Oh, there are other Don Juans.
Yeah, but I don't want to do any of those either. I don't want to do any of them.
Any of the tales ever?
I don't know that there's any, like, anything I want to read once a week for a year.
We have hit 101 episodes.
101?
This is 101 right now.
I have no Dalmatian tales.
When do we reboot? Like a comic book. And we start fresh.
Reboot?
Yeah.
And, like, stop reading fairy tales and do something else?
No, just start over.
Oh,
new origin story.
I feel like our opportunity was this episode, so it's probably too late for another 100.
Well, see you at 201 then.
Yeah, we'll start fresh.
We'll talk about
the wonderful sheep.
Yeah. And then we just go back around those 200.
Yep.
See if we've gained any new insights.
Mm-hmm.
Wisdoms.
Well, we have to read two tales this week to make up for the fact that Audacity ate an entirety of one episode.
This week?
Yeah, because we didn't release one today.
Oh. You're right.
So we have to release this one later, and then I have to skip out on assisting on Thursday so that we can record again.
That's too bad. Okay. Didn't realize that.
Yep, so you get double the dose, so let's keep going. I am going to give you options. This is against all the speakings of my soul and my better judgment and the wisdom of the universe.
Then why are you doing it?
Because it's funny, I guess. Maybe. I want you to have a chance to choose your fate. However, it's going to be a limited chance, and it's going to be titles you've heard before because you keep saying no to them over and over again.
Let's do the one in the sky.
We'll see if it comes up. Don't jinx it or skew it.
Our Lady's Child.
Uh-huh. Never heard of that one.
By who?
Grimm.
Okay.
We've never heard that title before.
Yeah, never once have you heard that title.
I don't remember it.
The 12 Months.
Genuinely don't remember that.
That one hasn't come up nearly as often.
Where's it from?
That one's from Czechoslovakia. Cinderstick. From Georgia.
Cinderstick was vetoed a long time ago.
I remember that one because it sounded like something I would eat, but not something I would listen to.
I would pull Peter Bull out for this, but we've been in Denmark a lot lately, so Peter Bull does get to rest for a little while.
What if we just don't choose?
What would happen?
I would choose never for you.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind.
That was less existential than I thought it was going to be.
It's like in the first Hunger Games where they refuse to kill each other. What do? Somebody just shoots one of them.
Yeah.
And you randomly decide the winner. That's how they should have done it in the book. Somebody from the Capitol, like, they should have a sniper. Like, okay, you don't want to play?
It's the sniper's choice.
PETA, you're the winner. Congratulations.
Thoughts? esteemed colleague?
I don't remember the titles.
12 months.
Cinnamon buns. 12 years a slave. Our Fair Lady.
Yep. Got them in one.
Something like that. I don't know. What are they about?
12 months. Let's go with that one.
Okay.
Czechoslovakia.
Sure. Why not?
Boom City Boom.
Is that what they call Prague?
No, it's a warm up. What?
That's what you say at the airport. If you want to go to Prague, you say, give me one ticket to Boom City Boom. And that's what they give you.
Hartsfield-Jackson is very open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And patient.
You gotta know the right people there.
Is that the airport code for Prague?
Mm-hmm.
Is BMCTBM?
Yeah, Boom City Boom.
Anyhow.
This tale comes from the book Fairy Tales of Eastern Europe, selected and retold by Neil Philip.
Bastard.
And this is based on one that's retold by novelist Bozan Nemkova in Joseph Bodice's Czech Folk Tales, 1917. It's Arden Thompson 480, The Kind and Unkind Girls.
Interesting.
At the end of all these stories, and I always forget that until I get to the end, so this time I checked. I have to do a better system.
like inverting.
This Google Doc is 179 pages long. I need to...
You should also just delete the ones that we've been through.
Well, I want
to make it a shorter document.
I need to move them to a new document.
Yes.
Essentially. Because I want to have access to those notes without having to go hunt down the stories again. Anyway, are you guys ready?
Hit it.
Reading one of those other ones later this week. You only get two options.
That was not discussed.
I'm going to have to start narrowing them out so you can't keep ducking them.
Why? It's natural selection.
You could also just read them. You could not give us the choice and just say this is what we're doing.
I like giving you the illusion of participation.
If you don't give us a choice, then I'm deleting everything.
See?
As soon as we're done recording,
the end of
file
the day,
goes boop.
The end of the day, this loser dies by my hand.
So I'll compromise between your two demands and give you the illusion of a choice.
Give me 10 options.
The illusion of one choice. All right. Ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. Once there was a mother with two daughters. One was her own child, and the other one was her stepdaughter. So you can guess how that's about to go.
No.
Well, she loved her own kid.
What?
But she didn't even like to look at the stepdaughter.
Unprecedented.
Cinderella syndrome?
Yeah, essentially.
But it's from the stepmother's point of view. Has anyone done that?
If I'm ever a stepmother, I'm gonna do the opposite.
You should,
You're gonna hate your own kid.
Fuck my kid.
You should,
This kid is a champion.
I like that you're gonna be a stepmother.
Specifically.
You should do a series of drawings of Disney princesses for BuzzFeed, but draw them as their wicked stepmothers see them.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it could be very conceptual.
Very.
But.
Yeah, Cinderella's just a broom in a dress.
Does Ursula count as a stepmother?
Why not? If they don't have a stepmother, just insert one.
Did she and Titan ever do it?
I bet they did.
On the sly.
Why does she live way out there in that cave instead of with all the other fish people?
Yeah, why was she banished to...
I think there's history between those two.
They do seem awfully familiar with each other.
Triton built a giant dick monument into his palace.
He did.
And she is seeking vengeance against him for some slight.
He is down to clown. Or clown fish.
Well, he's got like 8 daughters.
Yeah.
That was already evident.
They came from somewhere, and they don't look anything alike.
Yeah, and his wife...
Well, we've seen the mother. She was in the third movie, which was straight to DVD.
But she doesn't look
old
enough.
You've seen
the
mother.
I've seen the mother.
How old is she?
Who?
The mother.
Dead.
Oh.
She died young.
Was she too young to have given birth to How many mermaids? Is it 8?
Probably around there.
I don't know. 8 or 12. Let's look it up.
8 or 12.
Yeah.
You see, know,
the story's
Duggar Rain.
The story's not good.
I'm not disappointed that Google didn't autofill that search for me.
How many mermaids are there?
King Triton's daughters. Disney Wikia gives me their birth orders.
Thank you for your well-spent time, Disney Wikia contributors.
Oh, man. Okay, so it's not giving me, like, a straight number, but it is giving me all the names,
mm-hmm.
where they're princess of. I'm assuming there had to be some kind of, like, show. I remember a Little Mermaid
show. There was a
Little
Mermaid show. I don't know if they were featured.
But I didn't watch that often. I don't remember the sisters.
Just count them up.
There's a book series, which this wiki editor has apparently faithfully read, because it's listing the names and hobbies and favorite foods and biggest fears of each of these princesses.
Listener, if you want to know any of those things, do it on your own time. I'm after one stat. Count those daughters.
Looks like 7.
Ah, so close.
Wrong.
That's Price is Right rules, though, right? I'm the closest?
Yeah, closest. I'm going over.
Well, I did go over. But...
Then no, you lose.
Everybody
but,
loses.
But Price is Right rules. But here's the question we have to ask, and then we can move on.
Okay.
How long is a mermaid gestation period?
And do mermaids give live birth like some sharks, or do they shoot out eggs?
It comes out the fish half, right?
I can only tell you what I know, and that she died when all of these princesses were toddler-aged.
Must be eggs.
Because Ariel was of speaking age at the time.
It must be eggs.
And she died around then. From the okay. information in the third movie,
okay.
Ariel's Beginning, I believe it's called.
Did they all look the same age?
The daughters?
Yeah.
Roughly.
So they could have just been a
packet
brood.
Of eggs.
A clutch of eggs yeah. that hatched around the same time.
Sure.
Maybe but mermaids breed like...
Seahorses?
Oh, that. Or
oysters.
I was thinking specifically manta rays, because manta rays have like this little egg pouch that's actually called a mermaid's purse.
Oh.
That's gross.
Because you find them washed up on the eastern shore sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
They're like little black things with curly things, and it's called a mermaid's purse. That's where... Look, I lived on an island for a summer.
The headliner is
I had to learn these things.
The headliner is that Triton dicked Ursula down.
At least once.
Yeah. And it was very good for both of them.
Anyway.
But it didn't end well.
This story.
What were we talking about?
So far we've got that a mom has a daughter and a stepdaughter, and she doesn't like the stepdaughter.
Okay.
And this is, of course, because Marusa, the stepdaughter, is prettier than her own daughter, Helena.
Yeah. Just like Ursula and Ariel.
Is Ursula Triton's stepdaughter who we also slept with?
No, the eels are Ursula's daughters. And Ariel's hotter than the eels, right?
Very much so, I would say. Given the option between the three, I know who I would pick.
Yeah.
Marusa is also gentle-hearted, and she doesn't know how beautiful she is. So, you know, she's
just
all humble,
like Ariel.
Too. So,
sensing a lot of similarities.
So she was never sure why her mother was so angry whenever she looked at her. Marusa had to do all the housework and then had to feed the cow while Helena spent her day adoring herself and laying around.
Mm-hmm.
Marusa, however, liked to work because she was a patient kind of person, and when her mother scolded her, she bore it like a lamb. But this was no good because the taunts just got crueler and crueler as Marusa grew prettier and Helena grew uglier.
Okay.
Because, I don't know, I guess, like, doing all the housework keeps you, like, fit and trim while lazing around looking at yourself in a mirror.
Gives you a buff beach bod.
She was just cut. And the real daughter got fat, I guess.
And pale, because no sun.
But like,
pale
but like
is usually
gross.
Good in this time, but...
But like translucent
but like,
pale.
Like,
a,
yeah,
like a grub.
Like sloppy.
She turned into some kind of earth dweller.
She glowed in the dark.
eating foods that gave her severe skin grease.
Jaundice.
Traumas. Yeah, she had hyper jaundice. She just stored up sunlight to exude it later at night when Ariel, who's the daughter? Marusa. The stepdaughter?
Marusa.
The stepdaughter's Marusa?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think I'm gonna call her Ariel, but
it's cashier.
We're also I don't know why we're trying to do this with the Little Mermaid when Cinderella is clearly a better corollary.
I think that's exactly why. Never let it be said that we take the easy route.
Yeah. The road less traveled.
Let's see. Pretty and ugly daughter, stepmother. Yeah, the one with the fish who had no mother figure at all. That's what that one sounds like.
It's the fish one, right?
What about that French one that read books all the time?
She must have been somebody's. She was a daughter.
Uh-huh.
But he was old and weird.
He was very old and very weird.
What about the one with the belly and the tiger?
What? Belly tiger?
The belly and the tiger.
She possessed both.
Yeah. Both visible at all times.
Oh, that belly. I was thinking, like, what are you trying to say about Mowgli? See, I don't know what you're saying. It's kind of f***ed up.
Excuse me.
My boy was starving, but you don't have to point it out.
He had kind of a bad step-parent situation.
Wolves. That was a pretty good situation. Wolves, for him.
Carnivorous I guess animals. So,
yeah. They loved him very much.
But if... I don't know. Shere Khan kind of sucked. He wasn't really a parent. But...
No, he's like a stupid uncle.
Who played the panther?
Which one?
The one.
The first one.
I don't remember.
The first original Disney Jungle Book.
Not the recent one.
The panther, whose name was...
Bagheera.
Bagheera, not Beluga. That's nope. A whale.
Yep. Beluga was the bear.
Bagheera. Who played Bagheera?
What does Disney Wikia have to say? Our new homepage.
Because for some reason, Billy Dee Williams is coming to mind, and I don't think that's right.
Don't believe so. Believe it was earlier than his career.
Lando Calrissian. Here's a quick fun fact. My AP European history teacher in high school, Charles Thibault Lanahan, insisted on donating and signing our yearbook as Chundo Calrissian, who he claimed was Lando's cousin. Because he wanted to be anonymous, and that was the alias that he chose.
The internet's very confused about this, because there's that live-action Jungle Book.
Mm-hmm. Just give me the right one.
That's why I told you to go to Disney Wikia.
Sebastian Cabot? Cabot?
Okay.
Sebastian.
I don't have any follow-up about...
Ben Kingsley's doing it for did it for the 2016 one, though.
Sure.
So Bagheera is Gandhi. That's right? Kingsley did Gandhi?
He did play Gandhi.
All right, cool. I'm bad at keeping up with...
And tricked everyone that he could act.
I mean, he can act.
He just chooses not to anymore.
Anyway, one day Mom thought, why should I even keep a pretty stepdaughter in my house? When boys come courting, they'll fall in love with her instead of Helena, and I want my daughter to get all the D.
Instead of this grub creature that's rolling around.
More bonbons, mother!
I'm never gonna sell off this...
She has pincers.
You probably never watched Dune the movie, but the, yeah, never mind.
Mother, call Netflix and tell them to get the TLC wedding series on there.
Call Netflix?
Yes.
Make demands?
Yeah. That's the kind of daughter Helena is.
Call Netflix pay-per-view.
Alright, from that moment, the stepmother and the daughter started to scheme together to get rid of Marusa, because the daughter did watch a lot of Four Weddings and wants to make sure she has them.
Is there a dad?
No.
Not one present that lives with them?
Nope.
Either dad.
Yeah, no dad.
There should be two dads.
No, no stepdad either. That comes for weekends with his grub daughter.
What, the grub daughter's real dad.
That's what I mean. But a stepdad for Marusa via stepmother.
His wheels are up the Maybe? Drive.
No, that doesn't make any sense.
Okay, so Helena came from...
A dad.
Yeah, a dad and then this lady's hoo-ha. Mm-hmm. And Marusa...
A different dad.
Could be same dad, different mom.
Could be.
Because they could be half-sisters.
Right.
The mom didn't have to be previously married for this whole situation to work out.
Right. No other parental unit. It's these three living together.
Yes.
As far as we know.
Yes.
Murder.
Okay.
It's noted. Simple.
Noted.
To get rid of her. No one else knows about her.
There are no witnesses.
Oh.
Why is this a planning situation? Just do it.
Well, one of them...
feds?
One of them hasn't lifted her own hands in a long time. And it's just a grub.
Lock the door and tell her to go away.
Roll the daughter onto the stepdaughter. And just let her be absorbed.
They starved and beat her.
Okay.
So it's like murder, but lengthy.
Right, so they're taking pleasure in this. Yeah, rather than just getting it done.
Definitely. But she bore it all, and in spite of this, she kept getting prettier.
I don't care for that message.
I don't either.
I was gonna say, I think this is starting to get unhealthy.
Yeah. Like, those bruises really bring out your eyes. Like, no, that's not... No. No.
I don't have to wear eyeshadow anymore.
Yeah, no.
You've permanently punched it onto me. It's big old raccoon eyeshadow.
One day in mid-January, Slugworth felt the longing for the scent of violets and told Marusa to go get some violets from the forest so she'd wear them at her waist and smell them.
As exercise?
What? No, she's just gonna sniff some violets.
But at her waist.
Oh.
I mean, so she needs to bend down to get there.
To trick her into doing crunches.
Yeah, her mom has been concerned about her growing sluggish ways and wants to, like, make sure she's at least a little bit in shape for bearing children later.
At least.
So, Marusa says, "Great heavens, what a strange notion. Who ever heard of violets growing under the snow?" And then Slugworth shouts, "You wretched tatterdemalion, how dare you argue when I tell you to do something?" And then she threatens to kill her if she doesn't get violets from the forest. And the stepmother reinforces this by grabbing Marusa and throwing her out of the door and slamming it shut. So Marusa goes into the forest, weeping, and the snow is very deep, and there's not even a footprint to be seen around. So she wanders for a very long time, gets tortured by hunger and trembling with cold, and begs God to take her from the world.
She could just leave. Right? Yeah. Is there anything forcing her to stay here?
Well, the fact
room
that they...
Room and board.
Yeah, they live in kind of an isolated place, apparently, and the snow is waist deep.
Oh,
and
well...
And she hasn't eaten much.
In this now is season, not the time to leave.
In this season, maybe not, but...
She sees a light in the distance, and she walks towards it, and comes to the top of a mountain.
By accident?
I guess.
Whoops, I've been climbing this whole time. Didn't even notice.
No wonder I feel shitty. There's a big fire burning there, and around the fire were 12 stones with 12 men sitting on them. Three of them had snow-white beards, three were not so old, three were even younger, and the three youngest were the most handsome. None of them were speaking. They all just sat silently staring at the fire and each other.
Ominous.
These were the 12 months. And Great January sat on the high seat with his white hair and beard, holding a club in his hand.
So he's the oldest.
I guess, yeah.
Youngest.
He was the first born month of the year, so.
I guess that's how that works.
Yep. Marusa stared and stood for a time in terror, but then she felt bolder and walked up to them and asked if she could warm her hands at the fire. January nodded at her and asked her what she was doing up there, and she said she's looking for violets because her stepfamily be crazy and they threatened to kill her. January stands up and he passes the club to March and offers him the high seat. March takes the seat and waves the club over the fire. The fire blazed up, and the snow began to melt.
February throws his hands up and is like, "The fuck, guys? right here.
You always forget about me. That's why I invented Valentine's Day, so I could get a little love.
Can they do that?
Yeah, why not? Their boss isn't around.
They can just switch seats around?
So the fire blazes up, snow begins to melt, trees bud, the ground covers with grass, and springtime came to this meadow, where violets were blooming. March commanded Marus to pick them quickly, and she did, and then thanked the months and scampered home. Her stepfamily was...
Seems like an abuse of power.
Yeah.
Just briefly change the season so that somebody can find some flowers.
Yeah. I was going to ask about the temporal ramifications
this is of what they were doing. This is why occasionally in December it's 70 degrees in January.
Somebody's looking for flowers again. Yeah.
You know how if you like take a plate or a glass like out of right out of the dishwasher when it was in hot water and you stick it under cold water, it'll crack.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The same thing happens to the earth. If you do it too quick.
It's worth noting.
Yeah, could break right apart.
Okay, so stepfamily is, of course, surprised to see her back, and Holina sulked and asked her where she got the violets. And Marusa said, well, they're just growing on under the bushes in a forest in the high mountains. And Holina put them in her waistband and let her mother smell them, but wouldn't let Marusa smell them, because fuck Marusa, that's why.
She didn't take any road sniffs?
I guess not.
That was not forward-thinking.
Although the seasons did change pretty quickly, and I know when the temperature changes around here, the first thing that messes up is my sinuses.
Yeah, that's true.
So she might not be able to smell.
She's just a mess right now.
She couldn't store up those road sniffs for later.
The next day, Slugworth longed for some strawberries, and so she ordered the same thing. Goes back to the mountain... Talks to the people about the strawberries. June gets to take the seat, so strawberries show up. She grabs some and goes home. Helena is sulky about getting what she wants again. And Marusa tells her where she found them. And Helena and the stepmom eat them and don't offer Marusa any of them. Next day, Helena longs for red apple. Threatens to kill. Goes to the mountain. September takes the seat. Apples grow on the trees. She takes two apples and goes home quickly.
Is no one else noticing the shift in season? Is it only occurring in the one location?
Maybe they, like, if they switch the club quickly enough, it can't spread.
They're just honed in on that one area.
It starts there and radiates outwards, and they just happen to live near the epicenter.
And that's, well, they are the epicenter. Yeah.
The epicenter is with them.
Where is this from? Czechoslovakia?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's true.
I mean, the story is from there, but this doesn't necessarily take place there.
It's true.
Yeah, that could also be why they tell her to go home quickly, so they can, like...
Get out of here before someone notices.
Get January back on that seat or start a global crisis. Melt all the ice caps. They prepare to beat her. Marusa begins to cry, and she prays to die before she's killed by her sister and stepmother. Why? I don't... And she runs away to the kitchen.
Are they still trying to kill her?
Yeah.
This is just... Like, they're just trying to milk her before they do it?
Yeah. And instead of following her to the kitchen to beat her, they take an apple break.
Yeah.
They each eat one, and they decide...
Gotta pump up first.
These are so delicious, they need more. Helena asks to have her fur coat so she could go get more herself and get all of them without that ragged little wretch eating them all on her way down. The mother tries to dissuade her, but it's no good. She really wants apples, even enough to move on her own. So mother wraps her up warmly, and she goes into the forest.
And she should have, like, a coat of blubber that will protect her from the elements.
Yeah. I mean, she might not have gotten fat from being lazy. She could have just lost
atrophied
muscle tone, and
so she's either like a grub or completely emaciated.
No, that's not also not true.
It's one or the other.
Well, what are you suggesting?
Choose.
She could be normal size, but just not like no muscle tone, no ability to.
She's a couch potato.
Right.
She's just flat everywhere.
Sure, Gordy. Sure, that's how atrophying
those
works.
Those are the three states of human beings.
She's just a box.
you're either a giant grub, emaciated, or flat.
Steamroller.
You have no features like at all.
Christopher Lloyd at the end of Roger Rabbit.
Yeah. I think what... what's her name? Helena?
Helena.
Is that the good one?
No.
What's the good one?
Marissa.
Ariel.
Yeah. I think what Ariel should do is lead her grub sister to the months, and then they should beat her to death.
Okay, why do you think that?
That would solve her problems.
Uh-huh.
Well, you gotta turn it around on her. Like, she leads her stepsister there. It's like, hey guys, I'm back. This is my evil stepsister. Get her.
Fresh meat.
Get her. Like, you, one of you has a club.
Do something.
I don't care what season it is for the next 10 minutes, and neither does anyone else.
Helena was wandering around in the snow for a long time, driven solely by her desire for apples. She sees the light in the distance, she finds the fire in the 12 stones, and she's terrified, but then she goes to warm her hands without so much as a by your leave to the months. January asks what the hell she's doing there, and she says, it's none of your business, and then she turned away and walked into the forest. January's pissed.
The fuck?
No one talked to January like that.
January and December and February do the fusion dance, and they create a super winter.
Essentially, January does wing his club over his head, making the sky grow dark and the fire burn low, and calls a giant snowstorm. So, yeah, basically. Helena can't see anymore, and she gets lost and falls into snowdrifts, and then her limbs grow weak. Let's be real. And she begins to freeze. Her mother's waiting and looking for her, and then decides she might like apples so much that she can't leave them.
That's what happened.
Why do these people have an apple habit? Of all the things
they were
could
just really
be
good
addicted to. I like apples. There are some very good ones, but...
Crunchy Fugees.
Uh-huh. Let's be honest, these were probably like the Honeycrisp.
Honeycrisp is the apple.
Yeah, that is the ultimate apple. That's why it's like $4 per apple.
I don't know why there are so many kinds. Who's eating Granny Smiths?
I'll take a Granny Smith.
I'll take it, but like if you have your choice, it's Honeycrisp every time, listeners. If you need apples, get a Honeycrisp.
If you're on a budget, the Fuji's good if you let it like sit for a while because it gets sweeter as it ages, and Gala's good if you eat it immediately.
Get a bunch, grind them all up.
Into an apple paste.
Rub your face on it.
Yeah.
Snort it.
Just inhale it, because that's apparently what this grub woman is doing.
Bathe in applesauce.
Alright, so mom figures that since her daughter is probably just like sucking on an apple tree somewhere, she's going to go look for her herself, and walks out into the snowstorm. Does not occur to her that the snowstorm might be the cause of her daughter's delay. She just wanders into the snowstorm like, apples!
Definitely 100% apples.
Yeah, so fixated is she on apples.
Marissa, meanwhile, cooked dinner for everybody and saw to the cow, but no one came back. She wonders where they're staying so long, and she set to work at her distaff. When the spindle was full and it was dark, they still didn't come back. So she shut the window, prayed for them, and goes to sleep. In the morning, she makes breakfast and then dinner, but however long she waited, it was no good. Neither came back. Both were frozen to death. And so, by default, she inherited the cottage, a piece of plowland, and a cow. Later, she marries a kind husband, and they both live happily ever after. The end.
She what? She marries?
Yep.
Just a guy?
Just a
where?
Dude. A nice dude. I don't know, someone who wandered by and was like, hey, nice cow. And she's like, hey, nice bod.
It's mine.
I own all this, because the people who owned it never returned from a snowstorm.
Never seen them again.
So it's mine now.
Come in.
I can cook.
Okay.
Yep. So that's that one.
Yeah, it is. I guess. What do we do about it?
I guess we discuss
typically
it.
We discuss it.
You say typically like we're gonna do something else this time.
I'm just saying that's typically the next part.
All right.
Unless otherwise designated.
I could.
You up for it?
Yeah. Let's do that.
I don't have too many questions about this, necessarily. Maybe more will form over the course of this discussion.
Yeah, I don't initially have a lot. I guess I'm not sure why she had to resort to that.
Resort to what? Staying at home quietly while her terrible family died?
Like, waiting for the events to unfold the way that they did. To get away. Like, to be free of them.
She is described as being patient, and this is often presented
saintly as, so.
As being, like, a desirable, attractive trait, especially in a beautiful lady.
I mean, she was patient.
She was passive.
Yes.
There's a difference between patience and passivity.
Right, like she...
I'll wait till this sorts itself out.
Yeah, she could have done something. Like, anything. She took zero actions on her own behalf.
Yeah, she did.
I can't think of a single thing.
She didn't even take advantage of having first pick of strawberries and apples to solve her own starvation issues.
Like, not until she was accused of eating them did it even occur to her that she could have.
Right.
She.
I mean, obviously it's been a very abusive, gaslighty kind of relationship. So, you know.
Right. Factor that in.
Her agency's limited there from.
But she is an AI bot. Like, she performs the commands that are given to her and nothing else.
Yeah, the problem of the dad is definitely a big one.
Where is dad?
Right.
It is hard to be invested in a character who is so passive, who just does nothing. It's especially bad in movies, I think. Just the nature of the format means that people will abandon a passive character.
Like, interestingly, that's one of the biggest mistakes that beginning writers make.
Too passive.
Right, like their characters
that just go along with the stream.
Right, and they're not self-driven at all. They're just kind of driven by the external forces in the story. I know that was definitely an issue that I got harped on when I was in my creative writing classes, and seemed to be a common problem among writers.
I think so. I remember in my screenwriting class that was pointed out a few times. Not as many times as it should have been, but it did come up. What could she have done? Who does she need to be to become a heroine that is worthy of our attention? Because right now she's not. Like, she was in a bad situation, and things just happened in a way that she is no longer in that situation.
Right, she was polite once to some people and they helped her out.
She could have been a statue with wheels on it.
With a "please buy your leave" written in...
Yeah.
In ink.
I guess the only thing she did, like the only choice that she made, was she chose to ask the months, "Is it okay to warm my hands?"
She did also make the choice to tell them about her situation.
Which is a big, I guess so.
And that's a big deal in, like, a gaslighty, abusive situation, is to,
right.
like, to go she, tell someone.
Did she tell so them, good. Or did they ask her to tell her? Well, because that could have just been programming.
Okay, that's fair. They did ask why she
command
was...
Command received.
They did ask why she was there. And she could have just stopped it at, "I'm looking for violets," and then they would have been like,
"Yeah,
what? Idiot.
It's winter."
But she did make the conscious choice to give the full explanation of what was going on. So she did kind of get out of her situation and seek help with somebody, which is a good message, because mm-hmm. sometimes you can't extract yourself from these kind of situations without external help.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's good. However, it would have been nice to see that as more of a conscious choice and to have her have a little bit more... This one's tough, because when you're in a situation like this, you don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
very clearly. It takes getting out of it and looking back to see how bad it really is, especially if this has been her life from a very young age. And it's definitely...
It has been stepped up in recent years.
Right. Well, now she's hitting hot Marion years, so she's 12.
Right. So the beatings of the starving has commenced.
Right.
If that is the case, then this is just... like, we're just not presented with enough of the internal monologue to be attached to this. If you're not going to do that, if you wanted to make this, like, a story worth hearing, then she needs better opposition,
She also needs more character traits than nice.
Yeah.
It wouldn't hurt if she heard the call of the knife.
It wouldn't. Yeah, if she found... like, if she got up early to make breakfast one day and there was a leaflet on their door and she found it, she's like, what does this mean? Like, I don't even understand how somebody could live this way and she keeps it in secret.
She doesn't even have to kill
these people. No, that's just not what I mean by the call of the knife.
She just has to believe in the knife.
Right.
She has to come to trust in the knife.
You need to live by the knife.
She gets a knife delivered to her by a mysterious girl riding on horseback with a knife strapped at her.
Shooting two guns into the night.
She's just like, hey, looks like a bad situation. And then she flings a knife at the feet of this girl, and the girl picks it up. She feels the power of it. And robber girl nods once and rides off to South Africa.
For her work to continue.
And Marusa she picks up the knife. And she is a nice character. That's part of her character trait. She's a nice, patient, forgiving person. She goes in. She has a moment of doubt where she considers it. She looks at these people who've made her life miserable.
The fire in her eyes, rage.
She looks at bruises on her arms, and she looks at the knife.
The music swells.
And she makes a conscious decision to turn around, take the knife with her, and walk confidently into the forest to cut her own way.
I was going to say to stab a deer to death and eat it.
She could have done that, but she didn't. That's not the story that we have.
No, it's the story that we deserve.
Maybe, but she has to fight them or something.
She doesn't have to fight them. There
has to be a boss battle.
There are different ways.
This is
ways.
How these things work.
There are different ways to overcome this particular demon, and I think making the conscious decision not to become a monster that has been haunting your own life.
She has to die a hero.
Right.
Rather than live long enough to see herself become a villain.
Yeah, sure. Or rather than die a hero, do the hero's journey death, which is just a transformation of self, or her old passive self dies, and she gets a new self who can carve trees into a house.
I think, she might need more opposition than just, like, a stepmother and stepsister who, like, are mean to her, but...
They're more than mean, though, and I think a truly abusive family situation is a pretty steep opposition.
Yeah, that's true. It
was enough for Cinderella.
Right. It's
I mean, the Little Mermaid.
Right.
It was enough for Kida from Atlantis.
It's an antagonist that doesn't quite... like, we just don't have the perspective to make that... to experience that fully in the way that this is presented. Like, you need to be inside the character's head, not just watching them go through the motions.
Right, yeah. This story definitely has kind of a distance narrator to it, which is common in folktales.
Right.
So if we were to retell it,
yes.
And I think it'd be cool to have it almost gaslight the audience, too.
How so?
Like, you start it kind of early in her life with these people.
Mm-hmm.
And things start out kind of normal
in the fairy tale way.
Right. And the bad stuff gets slowly introduced, like a frog in the boiling water situation. And so the audience feels like something's wrong, but the protagonist is so sure that this is normal that the audience has, like, second guessing on their own instincts for a little while until, you know, very clearly this becomes not normal. And then our protagonist has to figure out a way to free herself both mentally and physically from the clutches of these people. Because it's that mental trap that's keeping her where she is.
Right.
She can walk into those mountains whenever. She is mentally tied to these people. So much so that when they disappear into a snowstorm, she still makes them dinner right. in case they return and prays for their well-being.
And breakfast.
And breakfast. And prays for their well-being is the clincher there.
Yeah.
Because if they came back and she hadn't made dinner,
there would be trouble.
Consequences. And so right. you could perceive that as being, you know, covering her ass there.
How long did she maintain that practice, do you think?
It probably
did. Of wasting food.
I mean, she probably still ate it over time, too. Or,
like, saved it in Tupperwares.
Yeah. But she maybe kept up the habit of making food place. For them for a while. Because it would be a while before that would leave her consciousness, or that fear mm-hmm. of the consequence would leave her consciousness enough for her to be able to deal with it. Especially since her only therapist is a cow. So yeah, we just need more perspective on this heroine. But her behavior makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice to have more character from her, too. Like,
right.
Like a more distinctive personality. Because nice isn't a character trait. It's just kind of like the baseline for being a person.
Mm-hmm.
It would help. You could also do it if you wanted to go, like, just a very pessimistic ending. Like, build it up to where you think, like, okay, you can see her out. Like, that she has an out. And once they're gone, she's gonna snap out of it. She's gonna come into her own. And then once they're gone, she doesn't. And you just see her
wither.
Stay in her gaslighted state.
Continuing to do
She never breaks free.
Doesn't marry in case they come back, because he wouldn't be allowed to live there.
Yeah. If you want to go, like, the Lars von Trier route.
I think we could go that way a little bit, but maybe she does find... I don't think marrying should be her way out of that, because that sends horrible messages.
I mean, that was her way out of it.
It was. I don't know that it was her way out of it. I think she did eventually... like, come to terms with owning her own place. We just didn't see that because it was all summarized in a couple of sentences. Because that wasn't the part of the story that the folktale cared about. But I think she would stay trapped in that gaslit mindset for a long time. But maybe eventually, as she's plowing land, she realizes this is my land. And she eats a carrot. Doesn't ask anyone for permission. And then she eats more of them. And she, like... just gorges herself on whatever produce she's been making, and she laughs maniacally.
Bits
and runs.
Of carrot falling out of her mouth as she does.
She turns to her cow and shouts, "What are you looking at?" This carrot spews from her lips.
And then she becomes the grub.
Wasn't where I was going.
Like, full circle.
Like more of a freedom thing where she's laughing and finally like able to do stuff, and she goes and she like plays the video games that Grub Woman always played that she was afraid to touch or whatever.
So you're saying that she didn't become a veggie tyrant?
Yeah, I'm saying that, yes, specifically she did not become a veggie tyrant.
She went back to the months and she started Monopolies.
And then one day she sees a hot piece of man walking down and she confidently strides up to him and is like, "Hey, I got carrots. Come back to my place.
Go live in that house.
You're mine. I'm going to pump you full of all the carrots you could want."
See, I say something, and then you take it to, like, unreasonable insanity town.
I have 12 men, and we can get them whenever we want them.
You want a snow party? You want to make snow angels? I know a guy.
I can make it snow. I can make it hot. I can make it autumn.
What do you need?
What do you need to harvest right now?
You know, I've always wanted an autumn wedding. It's April. Not no more, bitch! We're getting married.
Ecology be damned.
I have a couple of questions.
Okay, so you did formulate some.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. I had these at the beginning.
Okay.
I have not formulated additional ones.
Okay.
One is for the story in particular. One is for fairy tales in general.
All right.
Yeah.
A trend. The first one, this story, do you think that those guys got a charge from swishing things up ever so briefly?
They got a charge?
Yeah. Like it was exciting.
Oh.
Like that's why they went along with it, because it was naughty.
I think it definitely started a habit, judging from our current weather situations. Because in Georgia, for those of you who don't live here, in 1 week it will be 40 degrees, then 60 degrees, then 30 degrees, and then like 80.
So somebody's harvesting.
Right.
So
I think they started a habit they can't quite kick.
Like they knew that they really shouldn't. But it sounded cool and fun.
And they did, and they liked it.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds convincing.
I'm just curious why they would go along with it. And that's what I came up with.
Well, yeah.
Because she was nice.
Oh, okay.
Because they were into her.
Because they get away with it real quick while their boss, who I'm going to say is Baba Yaga, was out.
They did it because they could.
Right. They are eternally in the bodies that they're in?
I think so.
So January will always be a wizened old gentleman, and December will always be a baby face?
I don't think December is the baby face.
Well, how else would it be ordered?
Well, three of them are old with white beards.
Right. January, February, March.
No. December, January, February. The winter months.
Why is December the oldest?
They're not the oldest. They're just three old men. Because winter is the season of death.
They implied that January was the oldest.
You implied that January was the firstborn, and I assumed it went in order from there.
At least that's how it came across to me, that January is the oldest.
And it would make sense that December would be the youngest, because it's a month apart from starting anew.
Yeah.
So he's a little toddler.
He's not the oldest.
Okay.
He just has white hair and a white beard.
Well.
Three had snow white beards.
Right.
December, January, February.
So rules be damned.
Three were not so old. Three younger.
I guess spring is.
And then three babies.
Spring is the
youngest. Well, the three youngest are the most handsome. I'm assuming those are summer.
They are babies, though. They're handsome, but
they're babies. Why would summer be the youngest?
They're either summer or they're spring.
Right.
Spring would be the youngest. If winter's the old man, then surely the youngest is spring.
That means they're sitting...
Otherwise, there is no order to this universe.
They're sitting all out of order.
Yeah, well, they're wrong.
It's just grouping them by age, not telling you in what order they're sitting.
So
the story's not saying on these three stones there were old guys. On the stones directly next to them there were younger ones.
But are they not sitting in month order?
I have to assume they're sitting in some order.
They're sitting in month order. They're just describing them physically in groups as they resemble each other.
Right.
And they're going from oldest to youngest because three were really old. Three were super young and awesome. And then I guess like three were not as old and three were younger. It's just, the story's telling it in age order, in the order of seating.
No, I get that. I'm asking you, what order are they sitting in now?
Order of months.
But it's just
December's the oldest.
No, no one's the oldest. The three winter months have the white beards.
Right. So it's December, January, February sitting in that row.
Yes. They're in a circle.
They're in a circle. They have to be positioned in a circle.
Right. So there's no rows.
Well, I'm just saying December's not sitting next to August.
No, December's next to January.
That would be insane.
January gets to take the big seat.
Yeah.
December and February are hanging out on either side.
Yeah.
December's had its turn in the round robin.
Yep. Yeah, and it goes around in the right order.
Right.
But it's just all willy-nilly as to who's old and who's young.
Winter is old. Winter has the Snow White beards.
Yes.
The others we're not sure about.
But surely, logic follows that Spring would be the youngest.
Yes, I am conceding to that point.
And they would be sitting next to the Winter group.
Yes.
Okay.
Consecutively.
That's fine. We're done. If it is not this way, I'm burning this episode.
And then the middle ones are Summer.
Uh-huh.
And then the slightly younger ones than the old guys are Autumn. So
yes.
They're aging with the year.
Yes.
I still take umbrage with the fact that December is included.
The seasonal months are different from the Roman calendar months.
Right. Which is the one that I prefer.
Well, okay.
I'm going to roll my eyes 10 billion times at you. The seasonal months are what matters here.
Sure. I will concede that. I'm just letting you know I take umbrage with it.
There's no chart, right? In the book?
there's no illustration.
There's no diagram.
For these men.
Oh, well.
Anyway, next question. Who are all these straw people in fairy tales?
Straw people?
Yeah, where'd they come from?
What are you talking about?
Well, the youngest, most beautiful one is the hard worker. She loves to work. She works the best. The oldest, ugliest one, she hates to work. There's no in-between. They are this way. This is the story. Where'd they come from? No people are like that. Where did this idea come from for characters? And why is it so prevalent?
I don't know. You might be delving into deeper territory than we're qualified to comment on.
Remember, Tyler, we don't wear folklorist hats. We wear dunce hats and we read folklore.
But it's a good question. I just don't know the answer. Because it illustrates the dichotomy of man. Some of us are young and good-looking and hard workers and nicer and just better, and some of us are mean and weak and cruel and worse. And I think we all know who we are.
We all like to think who we are, sure.
I don't know. Because. It's a good way of illustrating...
Simplifying.
...a point. It's a way for them to mass produce these without worrying too much about character details.
That's fair.
And for a long time...
It's like what I fear the Star Wars universe will become.
They're all palette swaps.
I know psychologically we tend to create that halo effect around attractive people.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they're hot and therefore they're...
good at work.
Their negative qualities are diminished and their positive ones we emphasize for the most part. And it's possible that that's a trait meant to help keep healthy genes alive. Like, pretty people, as we see them, tend to be, like, more symmetrical, again, better physical shape. You know, they have all the things in working order.
Mm-hmm.
They are as close to, or closer to an ideal human than most of us.
What we assume one to be.
Right. Well, genetically, like, survival-wise, symmetry... The reason we find symmetry attractive is that it means things were kind of put together right.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other stuff, like clear skin is a sign of health and yada, yada, yada. Like, there are reasons why we find the things attractive that we do as a species. And so if our brain conflates that with, this is someone that I want to not only bone down with, but admire and make a life with, it works out better for the genetics of the species, because then your kids are not only more symmetrical and healthier, but they have, like, people around to take care of them. So I guess, like, I'm not a psychologist either. I am an art teacher. But from an armchair psychology perspective, it makes a little bit of sense why we would be programmed to be like, yeah, that hot chick is super cool and nice.
And we are armchair whatever we need.
Yeah, we're armchair everything.
I guess I'm just still curious why they're always portrayed as downtrodden in the beginning, despite being perfect specimens of humanity.
So they have somewhere...
They're also the underdog.
So they have something to aspire to. So there's conflict. I don't know.
Right. I mean, there's conflict.
Like, we believe them to be the ideal human, but also we treat them poorly.
Because it makes it an injustice in the story. This person is hot. She deserves to be treated well and because she's hot.
Damn it, look at these grub people.
And this stepmother has gone outside the bounds of natural law and is treating her like crap.
And the ugly person who we, the folk, like to make fun of. And
with her little grub arms.
She's getting the good stuff.
She's getting
the good apples.
She's getting the fruit jammed down her cram hole. And that's not right.
We solved it.
Who are the 12 months in The Little Mermaid? Final question.
Who are they?
Yeah, what's the corollary?
Oh, like random fish.
Okay.
You know, like that really chubby fish who sings the song in the one time?
That's Mark.
Does a chubby fish?
Yeah, does a
flounder?
Yeah, he sings deep.
Yeah, he's got the deep voice.
Okay.
During the Under the Sea.
And Sebastian is January.
Sebastian is like June at best.
No, Sebastian's the angry one who...
Flounder's October.
Why?
Because he's scared.
Is
the spookiest month.
Okay. So they're just fish who are around. It would be pretty good if at, like...
I think January is that priest that pops a boner.
What? Say that again?
Yeah.
January is the priest that pops a boner at the end.
The priest?
You never seen that?
I don't think so.
I have it on VHS, if you can locate a VHS player.
There's also YouTube.
Cannot be done.
Look it up, listener. It's a fun little thing.
Okay, I'll have to look this
up. They claim it's his knee, but knees don't move that way.
Ah, okay. I see what you're getting at. It would be fun if at the end of that movie... there's just like a close up on Sebastian, and then his eyes glaze over, and a winter storm comes out of nowhere and takes the ship at sea.
He gets animation like Storm from X-Men.
Smoke starts leaking out of his mouth. And that's how The Little Mermaid ends.
We solved this one, guys.
As intended.
We wrap this one up neat.
That's what it would have been like if it was a good fairy tale.
Sure.
And a good story.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Okay.
I don't know if we can go any further with this.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
All right.
Well, we're what the folklore. We made sense out of that senseless tale for certain. Find us on the internet in places. Linked to at the bottom of this podcast. It's a lot easier to do that than to try and frantically type as we tell you where they are. Thank you, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
That's how it works.
This has been What the Folklore. Thanks for listening to our show. If you have any feedback for us, you can leave it either by Gmail or Facebook. Our Gmail account is wtfolklore@gmail.com, and our Facebook page can be found at facebook.com/WT Folklore. Feel free to send in stories if you have any particularly odd pieces of folklore or mythology that you would like to hear us talk about. Special thanks to the Brobdingnagian Bards for the use of their song Happily Ever After from their album Brobdingnagian Fairy Tales.